We're just finishing off communion. So we're going to let all the younger people head out now. That's elementary age and preschool age. Middle school and high school are going to stay. We're going to all stay together. But if you're elementary age, you're going to head out through those doors over there, preschool this way. So go have fun. Remember, we've got a potluck afterwards, so hopefully we'll all come back together again for that. In the meantime, let's just take a moment, you know, say hello to the people at your table. We also have some surveys on the table. You'll see some paper and pens there. And you know, we've changed things up a little bit for this series in a couple of ways. We've had coffee and donuts at the end rather than at the beginning. And we've also, as you can see, changed the seating arrangement, right? We've got these tables out. So we just wanted to get a little bit of feedback about that. We'll be going back to the previous setup next week. But we just want to hear, what did you think of this? How did you experience that? And there's an opportunity there to sort of rate that, each of those, and then also give us a little bit about a feedback about what you like best, what you like least about those two things. So take a moment to do that, and then we'll come back together again. Thank you. Okay. If you want to sort of finish off that survey, we'll get going again. So today we're wrapping up a series, just a short series, it'll only be 3 weeks long, about loneliness. It's been called Positively Lonely, and we're trying to sort of look at loneliness in a new light, not to say that loneliness is a good thing, but look at how we can move forward positively if we are feeling lonely, and also maybe reflect on some of the, what does loneliness actually say to us about ourselves, about our culture, that raises awareness of ways perhaps we need to change, things that need to be transformed in our own lives and in the culture around us. So we're going to wrap things up today, and then it will be Lent. Next Sunday will be the first Sunday of Lent. More about that later. We'll talk a little bit about the series that's coming up and some different activities for that. But today we're going to wrap up the series, and you know, we've been looking, for the past 2 weeks, we've been looking at loneliness, firstly as something that's universal. I think we've all experienced loneliness at some time. We've certainly seen through some of the data we looked at last week that it's very present in our culture, pretty universally experienced in our culture, and it kind of transcends perhaps many of the stereotypes that we might associate with loneliness. You can be surrounded by people and feel lonely. You can also be very isolated and feel lonely. Loneliness seems to sort of affect us at different times of our lives, in different contexts of our lives. So maybe when we've experienced a transition, we've moved to a new location, or we changed job, or, you know, as we heard from someone on the panel last week, maybe we become, you know, we have children and we become a stay-at-home parent, and, you know, our context changes. And we might feel very, very busy and yet still feel lonely. I was talking to a teacher who said that they feel, yes, they're surrounded by people all day, but then get home and sort of don't have the energy to really reach out to anybody else and feel very lonely, but just don't really know what to do. And it's not like they're not connected to other people. They have plenty of people in their life. So it's a kind of complex issue, and one that I think we, perhaps especially over these last couple of weeks as we've looked at it, we've recognized that there's no typical form of loneliness, perhaps. But we've looked at it through a couple of lenses. Firstly, we've looked at it from the perspective of what we might call inward aspects. You know, in the first week, we reflected on our inner life and the fact that we're not alone, that we're in a universe of love, that God is love. And then last week, we looked more at our need to connect to people, that we experience life and fullness through connection to other people. That's a really important part of us. So, you know, we're going to just explore those two aspects a little bit again. And then, you know, we'll have some opportunity to reflect on those and then perhaps apply, as we finish out this series, some practical things. What can we actually do? What are some practical things we can do, both for ourselves and for others? So on this inward aspect, the reality there is that we are conscious beings, right? We have an existential awareness. And we as human beings function so much better, so much more fully, in a much more full way when our consciousness is centered on love. And we, in that first week, we talked about the fact that when we experience intimacy in God, when we're centered around intimacy with divine presence, it actually empowers us to develop healthier intimacy with other people. We're also, though, social animals, right? We're social beings. I mean, to kind of, in a way, put it crudely, we're like bees or dogs. You know, we're biological beings that are social. We need one another. We need the pack, if you like. And that's just how we are. We need one another, and we are needed by others. So if we're disconnected or if we feel lonely, that's actually probably a very normal thing to feel. It's something's not right because we need that community. It's like we're wired for it. We're whether you believe we're designed for that or we've evolved that way, that is our reality. We're social beings. And I think the Bible, last week Ruth mentioned a scripture from Genesis about, you know, God seeing creation as good. But it's not good that we're alone, that humanity is alone. And that, you know, those early stories in the scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures, really kind of get at some of our primordial needs, I think. And we're not going to look at those scriptures today, but if you look at in chapter 3, in verse 9, there's a telling question that God asks. And God says, "Adam, where are you?" And there's that sense of the withdrawal of humanity from divine presence, the withdrawal of humanity from intimacy with God. And then in the next chapter, chapter 4 and verse 9, so 9 again, there's another question God asks, which is, "Cain, where is your brother Abel?" And that's the story there of where Cain kills Abel. So there's this sense of enmity, of distance, of separation between human and human, and our withdrawal from one another. So you know, these are very primordial needs. And for some reason, we withdraw from one another. For some reason, even though we're wired that way, we need it, but we withdraw. We compete, we antagonize. For some reason, we are afraid of divine love. We withdraw from divine love. Perhaps we, you know, as we talked about in that first week, we're maybe looking for it in other places. We're trying to experience that divine love in ways that are much more controllable for us, perhaps much more tangible. And that might be one reason. But honestly, this has baffled me because I think I shared that first week. For me personally, that's knowing I am loved and living out of that consciousness, living out of that mindset, that worldview, has been very difficult for me. And in my profession, I get to talk with a lot of people about that's how they feel about that, and I know I'm not alone in that. Why is it such a struggle? It still, to some degree, baffles me that we find it so hard to accept love. I wonder if, you know, we're perhaps maybe afraid because we sort of don't dare believe it. I mean, does it seem too good to be true? And we don't want to get disappointed. That might be one reason. Maybe we just struggle to allow ourselves to be loved. I think we experience that in lots of aspects of life. Just to accept and receive pure love from somebody else, it can make us feel guilty, like we owe them something or that we don't deserve it. Like perhaps we don't actually want the universe, we don't want reality to be like that. We want it to be fairer, right? Because we know there's a whole load of reasons why we shouldn't be loved. And it doesn't seem fair, perhaps, that we should be completely loved. And we maybe view other people that way. But the crazy thing about love, about pure love, about divine love, is that it's indiscriminate. It's completely indiscriminate. It's not based on what you deserve or not. And that's the concept of grace that is at the heart of this divine love, is that it's not about what you deserve. Whereas we've sort of made life all about what you deserve, right? And getting your just returns for the right things you do. And just returns, usually we think this for other people, about the wrong things that you do. But we really think that about ourselves too. So, you know, we need this sort of mind shift, if you like, in terms of love, both in terms of how we relate to God, to divine presence in our lives, and how we relate to others. And that's been a challenge for humanity, it seems, right from the beginning. Whenever that beginning was, whenever, you know, we became conscious beings, we've struggled, it seems, with those issues. They've really been a challenge for us. So we're just going to explore those two primordial needs, if you like, a little bit. And you may remember that a couple of weeks ago we looked at this passage about love. Okay, so we're going to talk about love, divine love, our acceptance by God, and we'll talk about loving one another and our acceptance of one another. So in Romans 8 it says, "For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." So nothing, the reality is that nothing separates us from the love of God. And as I said, that's something I think that we struggle with. So let me tell you a little story about an experience I had, because it was quite a long time ago now, probably 25 years or more ago. I was at a point in my life, I was in my, you can work out how old I am from that, I was in my mid-20s. And I was really struggling with life. I felt like my, I was pretty depressed, pretty anxious, felt like my life was unraveling in some respects, and really did not like myself. And that was, some of that is just I didn't know why I didn't like myself. Some of it was I knew why I didn't like myself, because of the stuff I'd done and the way I was. There was all sorts of factors there. But what I found was that lack of love of myself, and I grew up in a religious family, so that was very much associated with a sense of whether I'm loved by God or not. I mean, how could God love me? I struggled with that. So my sense of self-worth was really tied up religiously in many ways with my sense of what God thought about me. But it also alienated me from other people. I felt anxious around other people. I felt socially anxious around other people, and because I didn't feel I was okay. I didn't feel I was right. I didn't feel like if people really knew me, that people would really like me. So I was kind of, you know, I socialized, and probably a lot of people would not have noticed anything. But I know that internally, I was living my life as though I needed to hide away, and I was afraid. I was very anxious. And as I said, you know, this contributed to a lot of anxiety and depression in my life. Something dramatic happened to me, actually, when I went to this church service where I encountered what I can only describe as I had a dramatic encounter with the love of God that actually changed my life. Now, I've had many different encounters in my life. You know, life on the whole is sort of, you know, a straight line in many respects. We're sort of just moving forward. But then there's occasional bumps in the road, positive and negative, right? Life-changing moments. Sometimes it feels like a dip. Sometimes it feels like a height. Most of the time, it's just moving forward fairly normally. But we can all point to different points in our lives where something happened and something changed. And this was one of those moments in my life. And I went to this church service feeling really terrible, feeling like, you know, I was afraid. I was afraid. I didn't want people to really know me. Didn't want to be exposed as being, you know, like a terrible person, all that kind of stuff. And I got into this service, and I can only describe it as I started to feel almost like it was like an electrical atmosphere, right? Now, we've been talking recently about the fact that the material world, the world that we perceive, is not all there is. There's way more to it than that, right? Also, we talked in the last week of the last service about this idea of God's spirit, the interaction of humanity and the divine as being at times kind of a little strange, and it's difficult to understand. And we talked about the day of Pentecost recorded in the Bible, which is a weird experience these people have. I think this was one of those kind of experiences where my material world and the bigger reality that I'm part of kind of, you know, interacted, and I don't really know how to describe it all, but I just sensed this overwhelming experience of love, that I was deeply loved. And it was to do with what was being talked about, it was to do with what we were singing about and those kinds of things. But I started to shake, and I couldn't stop myself shaking. And I was a doctor back then, so I had, you know, understanding of all the physical aspects of, you know, physiological aspects of the human body. And I was trying my hardest not to shake, and not, I think, this is ridiculous, this is histrionics. But it's like my material being was being overwhelmed by something bigger than just my material being, and it was almost like it couldn't contain it. There was so much love that I feel like the very molecules of my body were vibrating at a different frequency to normal. That's kind of what it felt like. And I turned to the person next to me, and they were doing exactly the same thing. And if this had been on the TV, we would have been viewed, you know, on those religious channels, we would have been thought of as complete, you know, weirdos. But this was sensible me, you know, at the time. I can do is explain that reality. So something really dramatic happened. Now, all sorts of things happened in that experience, which, you know, you don't really need to know. But so I went away from that place with this overwhelming sense of God's love. I just felt like, I felt loved. I felt at one with God. I felt at one with the universe. And I went out to drive home. I had about a 30-mile drive home for, back to where I lived. I'd traveled quite a way to go to this service. And there were reasons for that. On the way home, I went to get to the car, and these lads had broken into my car. And they were, they said, smash the window. This is about 10 o'clock at night by now, and I had it was a cold day, rainy day, as it always is in England, and I had to drive back. And I got to my car, and I did not care. I just didn't care. And I looked over at these guys, and they were kind of jeering at me. I think they were laughing, probably because they broke into my car and probably went like, well, there's nothing worth stealing here. You know, it's like they were, that was pretty amusing to them. But I had no animosity towards them, right? I felt that, so my, that sense of being loved, I felt not only one with God, but I felt one with people. I felt like, I'm not going to blame you. I'm not going to judge you. I mean, not to say what they did was right at all. But I just, there was no sense of animosity there, right? There was a deeper connection to humanity as a result of that experience of love that I had. And I asked myself, actually, am I still like that? Right, that was an experience, and it set me on a different trajectory in my life, a very different trajectory in my life. And I've experienced more of that along the way. And, you know, we've got to get this in context. We all have certain heights and certain lows, right? And we can't necessarily experience those all the time. We certainly don't want to experience the lows all the time, but we don't get to experience the heights all the time either. But I asked myself, if somebody broke into my car right now, and I walked outside, do you know, where I'm at the moment, I'm not sure I'd be quite so gracious. Just put it out there, so don't anybody go and break in my car. You will find nothing in my car either, you know, so don't, you know, nothing really worth taking. You know, and that's a challenge to me, because that's something I think we need to work at. We work at this experiencing God's love, right? Through certain spiritual disciplines and activities, we can work at cultivating the sense that we are loved. And that itself puts us in a more harmonious relationship with humanity in general. Let's just take a little pause there, and then we'll talk a bit more about this, a more direct connection to other people. But in the first week again, we did a brief meditation. We're going to do another one now. So we're going to just take a moment to open ourselves in whatever way to experiencing God's love. Okay, so nobody's going to be asked to do anything. This is very personal. And, you know, we're just going to be sat at the tables where we are now. Maybe we can just put the lights down a tad. And I'm going to just explain what we're going to do, and then we'll just have some silence in which we'll do it. Okay, so I'll explain it all up front. And we've done this thing many times, so you might be very familiar with this. But we're going to sit, and we're going to sit in a sort of physically neutral position. Just get your body comfortable so you don't have to worry about backache or, you know, just rest your hands on your lap or whatever. But there's no magic formula for this, right? So we're just going to sit comfortably. And then we're going to breathe. We're just going to focus on our breathing. Take some breaths in and out. You don't have to hyperventilate, but just focus on your breathing in and out. Now, there's some reasons we do that. Firstly, we know physiologically when we focus on our breathing, it view of spirituality, just biologically, it relaxes us. So that's one reason we do it. The other is, I think, there's something about breathing that is really fundamental, right? We all have to do it. It's almost like acknowledging our breathing is surrendering to the fact that we don't get to control the universe. And that's okay. And we're just surrendering control. And then thirdly, focusing on our breathing helps us return to a center. You know, it's very kind of physically central to us, right, breathing. But also, in this meditation, you're going to get distracted. We're all going to get distracted. We'll think other thoughts, and our mind will go different places. So breathing is a great central thing to return back to. Just, okay, if I get distracted, I'm just going to focus on my breathing again and focus again. Okay, so that's all the breathing is. It's not some kind of magic or anything like that. And then when we've sort of got into that breathing, just focusing on our breathing, I want you to imagine that you are surrounded by love. And you know, imagination is a beautiful thing, right? Because we can imagine all kinds of things. So imagine that you are perhaps, you know, in this room, and this room is full of love, and on your in-breath, you're breathing in God's love. And it probably helps to have your eyes closed for this, right, to imagine things. So on the in-breath, we're going to breathe in God's love. Another way of doing that, you might want to imagine you're in the ocean and you're breathing in God's love. Now, for some people, that might be traumatic because, you know, you sort of do that when you're drowning. But, you know, I think you get the point here, that we're just surrounded and bathed by God's love. And then on the out-breath, so just get used to that, breathing in God's love. And then on the out-breath, start thinking, okay, I'm going to let go of everything that tells me I'm not loved. Okay, so on the out-breath, I'm just kind of sinking deeper into this love, sinking deeper into this love. Because what's going to happen is our minds are going to go through all the reasons why maybe this isn't true. Maybe I'm not surrounded by love. Maybe everybody else is and I'm not. Or maybe none of us are really. Or maybe, yeah, I am surrounded by love, but I mean, what about this, that, and the other about me? Or there's all these reasons that our mind latches onto to convince us that we're not loved. So we're just going to let go of those. So as you think those things, breathe them out. And then, if they're distracting you, just return to your breathing and center yourself. And then, God is love. Breathing God's love. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. We're just going to do it for 2 minutes, right? It's not very long, but we're going to do it for 2 minutes. So let's just sit silently and invite God's love, invite God's presence. Okay, so that was just a couple of minutes. That might have felt very quick to some of us. It might have felt like an age to some of us. But we're going to, there's a discussion question going to come up on the screen here that we can chat about at our group, so in our tables. So everybody's welcome to join in a discussion. Everybody's welcome not to. If you'd rather just sit alone, that's totally fine. Please feel very free. But maybe at our tables we could just process what we experienced then. What was that like for us? You know, that 2 minutes of silence. But then maybe go on to talk about this. What helps me experience God's presence in a way that makes me feel that I'm not alone? Right? We all have different stories, different times where we can perhaps remember really feeling God's presence very closely, really experiencing God's love. Let's share some of those, or just talk about what do we do in order to experience that sense of God's presence so that we don't feel alone. Let's have a moment of discussion at our tables, then we'll come back together again. Let's carry on. So let's shift gears a little bit. So we've been talking there about experiencing God's love and this sort of not being alone in the sort of vertical, if you like, just for want of a better term, dimension, this sense of us and God. But the reality is that we experience God, we experience divine love through other people, right? That is perhaps one of the more everyday ways in which we experience God. Jesus said in Luke's Gospel, "The kingdom of God is among you." So this dynamic spiritual reality is among you. Actually, that word could be translated another way. If you look in the Young's literal translation, right, which is a kind of difficult translation to read, because it goes into a lot of detail about what all the language means, but it translates that section, "The reign of God is within you." In other words, the divine presence is within us. It's without us, okay, so we seek God's presence elsewhere, but we also seek God's presence within us, and that's why we do some of those meditation exercises, right? But what that means is that God is in you, and God is in me. That means that I encounter God in you. That's why we need one another. Or that's a big part of why we need one another, because we encounter God in one another. That means I need you, but also it means that I am needed. Right? I carry that presence in a way that is somewhat unique. You know, Jesus also said in if we go to John's Gospel, Jesus said, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Jesus carries the light of the world. But Jesus also said in Matthew's Gospel, "You are the light of the world." So we carry this light. That's a pretty amazing thing. We carry divine light. We carry it. And that's why, especially in the Christian scriptures, the New Testament scriptures, there's appeals to communities of followers of Jesus about loving one another, about being connected to one another, about looking out for one another because of this reality. In James says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that God can heal you. Now, you know, usually you go to a priest or you go to, in that day, you would God forgave sins. That's what happens there. But here's James saying, we need one another even for that kind of thing. Like there's a spiritual interaction happens between one another. We need each other. That's an incredible reality. And so as we sort of wrestle with this, and we come back, I think, to this whole idea of experiencing God and experience life to the full, we need one another. If we are feeling alone, we need other people, right? It's normal. It's normal that we'd feel something's not right. And also, if we're not feeling alone, we carry light that other people might need, right? So we need to sort of wrestle with these challenges. Now, let's try and turn this somewhat practical. We'll, by the way, just for the slides, we'll skip over the discussion question for now, and we'll come back to that at the end. But I want us to think a little bit about what can we do about this. So we've talked about our need for God, our need for divine love, our need for one another. What can we do to take action going out of this series in a way that might address loneliness in our own lives and also loneliness in the culture around us, even in the community around us? First one is this. Okay, so I want to give you sort of three things to think about, and there's a couple of breakdowns of those. But the first one is this. First of all, let's let go of guilt, right? We might feel guilty that, I don't experience enough of God's love. I should be a more disciplined person. Whatever rationale or reasoning, we might feel guilty about that. We might feel guilty that we're lonely. Maybe we think that's our fault. If I was more this, more that, more the other, people might like me more. And we might take that on as guilt. We might maybe feel, I need to be more outward to other people, but I feel so overwhelmed already. And that comes on us like a burden. So let's just say, let's none of us feel guilty. Right, Jesus addresses. He would sort of criticize religious authorities, and it's amazing how even the best of our spirituality can quickly become a "you've got to" rather than "you get to." But he criticized the religious authorities, saying they tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. So, if we're in it from anything that we're talking about in this series or any series, if that leads to a sense of guilt. Oh, I've got to just do something else. I don't think that's going to motivate anybody, right? But let's think about this in the spirit of Jesus, who in Matthew 11 says, a very familiar passage for us, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you will recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me, work with me, watch how I do it, learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Right? So that's the spirit in which we're thinking about this from a practical point of view. We get to do this. This is an invitation into divine love. It's not something forced. It's an invitation into relationships. Okay, so the first thing, let's let go of guilt. Second thing, let's think about changing our mindset, or perhaps more importantly, changing our behavior, changing what we do. And I'll give you three things that we might think about in relation to that. Okay, the first one is let's change the culture around us, or the vibe around us, or the aura, if you like, as we interact with other people. For instance, what if we just spent more time, and this might be especially applicable if we're feeling more isolated, right? But what if we were to think, okay, I'm not going to worry what other people think about me, but at every opportunity I have, I'm going to start a conversation. So I'm going to ask how people are. I'm going to, that might be in a very small situation, like going through the checkout at the supermarket, or it might be a conversation at work. Start conversations, right? We can, and that's basically saying, here I am. And it's also saying, there you are, I see you, right? So being more ready to do that, that might feel uncomfortable, but maybe as we begin to practice that, it would get easier. And the second thing is, be more, disclose a bit more. So when people ask, how are you, or ask a question, maybe not responding just with a one-liner or I'm okay, but maybe share something about yourself. Maybe you would say, I'm doing great, and here's why. Maybe emphasize a positive initially, rather than, oh, I'm doing terrible, and here's why, and then giving all that. That's probably not going to win people over so much, but just disclose a little bit about yourself, because what you're saying there is, here I am. And that's somewhat vulnerable, maybe difficult to do, but other people then have the opportunity to say, oh, and here I am. And see what happens as a result of that, okay? So you know, just changing the culture around us is one behavioural change, if you like. The other thing is this. I think going deeper with a few people, like we can't, for some of us it might be, and I've talked with a number of people actually about this during this series. I mean, we had a conversation about this at the discussion table last week, the table that I was at, where most people around that table didn't necessarily feel isolated. They felt like they had lots of connections, but they longed to go deeper with some people that they felt maybe there's a potential deeper relationship there. I know in my life, I've when I look back over the years and the different challenges I've had through life, I've needed people who were there for me in the really difficult situations, in the sort of the more ugly situations of my life. I needed a depth of relationship, and you can't force that, and you can't make that happen. But again, you can make it more likely to happen. So there might be people in our lives that we think, I know I need that person. I think they need me, but I'm just not really putting the effort into it and the intent into it that it really requires. I need it. They need it. So that might be a change. We think through, okay, who do I want to draw especially close to and have that deeper connection to? So that would be the second thing there in terms of behavior change. And then the third thing is initiate. I think whether it's wanting to go deeper with somebody or whether it's just wanting to be more connected in general, whatever our needs might be. And, we're all over the map. And at different times in our lives, we've probably been in a different situation to how we are now, right? Things change over time. So there's no judgment in this, but we might feel more isolated, or we might feel not isolated, but we just need to go deeper. Either way, it's very easy for us, I think, to want and expect others to do the running, right? So we long for somebody to reach out to us, or we long for somebody to invite us into a deeper conversation. Well, what if we initiate? You know, Jesus said famously, the golden rule, do to others as you would have them do to you. I mean, that's a great way to live our lives, right? So be the change you want to see in the world. I mean, give what you want to receive, in other words. And we can be agents of change in that respect. So take the initiative. So we've talked about letting go of guilt and then changing our behavior by making connections, by going deeper, and by initiating. And then the third thing, and this is sort of more overarching, I think, is just, I call it following Jesus, or recognize that we're with Jesus in this, right? Jesus was a social animal, right? So you look at Jesus. Jesus is, he's got the crowds around him, and that was pretty demanding at times, I think, and some of us may feel like that. Perhaps you're in a busy job or a situation where lots of people are asking things of you and depending on you. Jesus had that kind of situation. Jesus had, you know, he was able to, despite the crowds, kind of focus in on, as a, you know, sort of fly-by listening and focused. You know, he was able to give people his utmost attention. He also had people that he seemed to relate to more closely. He made decisions about connecting more deeply with a few, and I'm sure that was controversial. His disciples, his 12, and then there were, even among the 12, there were three that he seemed closer to. And I would not be surprised if there was a bit of competition around that, or even a little bit of, you know, maybe Jesus got some flack for that. Who knows? But Jesus wasn't able to sustain intense relationships with the whole crowd. But Jesus was a social animal and seems to enjoy being with people. And Jesus also experienced loneliness, right? Jesus, at times in his life, was lonely. You look at Jesus' life, especially as we lead into Lent and as we lead up to Easter. We see in the Easter week, Jesus doing what we did just now, celebrating communion, or he's actually celebrating the Passover meal, and he says to his followers, I've earnestly desired to eat this meal with you. He seems to know he's about to die. And so in that moment of vulnerability, he wants to be with his friends. He wants to be around people. He's feeling lonely, I think. They go off to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus is praying, and he just wants his friends to stay with him because he knows his time's coming, and they fall asleep, and he feels alone. He feels kind of let down. You have this sense of aloneness for Jesus. Then, of course, his trial. He's rejected. They run away. They deny him. And even on the cross, Jesus cries out, I mean, my God, why have you forsaken me? There's this sense of aloneness in Jesus' life. So we can identify with Jesus in that loneliness even, and know that we're with somebody, we're following somebody who is with us and gets it. And Jesus likewise pursued this centeredness around God's love. So Jesus was not only sort of had experienced enforced loneliness, but Jesus also withdrew. So Jesus withdraws to pray. It seems like Jesus himself needed to reorient his life frequently, recalibrate his life around this sense of, I am loved, I'm part of this dimension of love. God loves me, and love can flow through me. And Jesus had to work at that, it seems. He would withdraw to pray and spend time alone. We celebrate the aloneness of Jesus in the season that we're coming to, right? When Jesus withdrew into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. That's what Lent represents for us, this sense of withdrawing and focusing ourselves on God, on divine love. For Jesus, you get this sense that people had said some pretty amazing things about him. John the Baptist, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. That's, whoa. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. One is coming whose sandals I am not worthy to tie or latch. I think Jesus is withdrawing into the desert because he knows, oh my gosh, I don't want to be distracted. I don't want to be centered around being that to all these people. I need to be centered around love. I need to refine my center. And he goes through these temptations. We'll talk more about that next week. But we celebrate in Lent this sense of aloneness, the aloneness of Jesus, in order to experience divine love. Now, this season, we begin Lent on Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, and then next Sunday is the first Sunday of Lent. We're going to start a series called Breaking the Chains. We've got a workbook here. You can pick up copies of these outside in the lobby on the table. So grab your copy of those, read it through. We also have, because I want to share with you some of the things that are going to be going on during Lent that I think actually give us lots of opportunity to make connections, right? To connect with another person, with another group of people. So we've got the series on Breaking the Chains. We'll introduce that more thoroughly next week, but grab a copy of the material. As part of that, we're going to have challenge groups, right? So the discipleship groups will be meeting as usual, so you'll get to, if you're part of a D group, you can go through this material together. But we're also going to have challenge groups that will focus on certain specific aspects of breaking the chains, this subject of social justice, of being God's love in the world and making the world a better place. We'll talk more about this next week, but just get the material and read it through and get a sense for where we're going with this. But there's an opportunity if you're not in a D group, or if you want to just take a break from your D group for a season and join one of these challenge groups. They just last for 3 weeks. They'll meet after church on a Sunday. You can join one of those. That, I would say, if you're feeling a little bit disconnected here, that this is a great way to jump in and find some connection with the backup that in 3 weeks, you're off the hook, right? So just in case, maybe it doesn't quite work out. But who knows what kind of connection you'll find and what kind of relationship you'll experience through that. So we also have daily activities that will begin this Ash Wednesday. So we have an Ash Wednesday service, by the way, this coming Wednesday at 7, where we have the imposition of ashes. So please come to that. But on Ash Wednesday, we have activities that are starting. And again, you can pick these up out in the Commons. They look like prayer activities, actions to do for each day of Lent. And then you can cut them out and form a chain. Okay, well, just read the instructions on that and the information in the workbook, and you'll see what we mean by that. But many of those actions, or those daily actions, are related to making a deeper connection to divine love in a very personal, alone kind of way. Some of them are about reaching out to other people or allowing other people to reach out to us. So these practices, I think, are the kind of things we're talking about when we've been talking about loneliness. On Tuesday this week, it's the day before Ash Wednesday. It's the last day before Lent. It's Fat Tuesday or Mardi Gras or Shrove Tuesday, or as we used to call it in England, Pancake Day. A very religious term. But we're going to have pancake dinners, as we always do. The discipleship groups and one or two others are hosting those. If you don't have anywhere to go for pancakes on Tuesday, just sign up. There's a list out there. Nobody need be alone on Pancake Day, right? So just sign up, and we'll get you to let you know about a location where there's a pancake dinner. And again, wonderful opportunity to meet people, to connect with people, if that's what you would like to do. And then, of course, you know, in a few minutes we're going to have a potluck together, right? So everybody's welcome to stay behind. Doesn't matter whether you've brought food or not. There'll be plenty of food. And we have this opportunity to reach out to one another. And I don't know whether maybe we can put that, I know this is out of order, put that discussion question up. We're going to sing a song to close out here. Here's a question to think about, over the potluck. Maybe this would be a conversation starter. Can you describe a time when somebody made you feel like you were not alone? So we've talked about connection to God, but what are some of our experiences in life where a connection to somebody else has made us feel like we're not alone? You know, we've all got stories like that, right? We've all got stories. That might be a great thing to have a chat about at your table, or, you know, as you go out and get food with somebody you run into. Let's look out for one another. Let's look out especially for the people that perhaps we know least, and welcome them in and say, I see you and here am I. So we're going to stand now. Let's just stand together. We'll sing this song, and then I'll come up and do the benediction, and then we'll enjoy potluck together.
So just call me.
Call me.
If you need a friend, just reach out to me. I'll be right here. I'm listening to you. Call me. Call me, call me, call me. Just reach out to me. If you need a friend.
Okay, so let's remember, let's look out for one another. We've got Cedar Vision 7 minutes still going on in that back corner over there. So if you're new and just want to find out a bit more about our church, come and see us. We'll answer any questions you have. We have a small gift for you as well. Remember the potluck, so food is outside in the lobby area. You can bring that in here and enjoy it here. Let's connect with one another together. Just leave the surveys you did on the table. We'll collect those up. Thanks for filling those out. If you haven't filled it out yet, maybe just take a minute to do that. Let's say this prayer together as we head out. May we be the loving presence of God to one another. As we share food and drink, may we see the light in one another. May we be a source of hope and comfort to one another. And may no one be alone. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your lunch.
Finds rest in God alone. My salvation.
from the rising of the sun to its going down. Let the name of the Lord be praised from the rising of the sun, from the rising. Down low, oh my soul, I cast down low and in turmoil.
Hope in God, for I shall again praise Him. Hope in God, for He is my salvation.
Hello? Just a quick note that in 5 minutes, we will be announcing the two winners of the golden pie slice. We have a fruit pie winner and a non-fruit pie winner.
Hello, everybody. All right. If you are seated at a table here in the main auditorium, or if you're out there in the lobby, or still in line for our potluck lunch, hopefully you can just auditorily cue in here as we are going to announce a very impressive set of results here for the pie competition today. First of all, if you're here and you can see me, please raise your hand if you know the answer to this question. In 11 days from today, what will be the special holiday that we will observe? Anybody? Oh, I see a few hands to my left, to my right. Let's go. Anybody younger than 10 raising their hand right now? Because everybody here looks pretty mature. Oh, I see. Okay. You're over here. What's going to happen in 11 days? What I heard was Pi Day. So we're a little early on this, but it is the right thing to do today. Pi competition. Thank you to everybody who brought in a pie today. We had 10 delicious pies back there. I'm going to tell you who won. First, I also want to extend thanks to the judge panel. We had 5 very distinguished judges back in the room here doing some hard work together. But we came up with a really impressive result because we had some really impressive pies to judge. As you know, we have 2 groups, 2 categories of pies. We have a fruit category. The winner, here we go, that felt good, for our fruit pie category was Will Corby. Will, if you could make your way up here, you now own this legendary golden pie server. Will Corby, are you still here? I don't see Will here yet. Can we, yeah, I see people looking for Will out there in the lobby, in the comments. All right, hopefully we'll get a hold of Will and have him on up here. We have a second category winner. The winner of the non-fruit pie category is Weston Pashane. Come on up here, young man. I see Weston. Weston, come on up here. Let me ask you a couple questions. What type of pie did you bring today?
Chocolate, but then the crust was made of cookie dough.
Chocolate with cookie dough crust, and there were some other great flavors. What else did you put in?
Chocolate chips, whipped cream, and some... Yeah, some more stuff.
And some more stuff. Thank you so much for bringing your pie today. It was delicious. Great job, Weston.
Good job. You're welcome.
Okay, still no Will Corby, right? Okay. Thankfully, we have 1 honorable mention award to give out at this time. We had great pies, 10 of them were all fantastic, but there was another very distinctive pie that we felt we had to recognize. It was a fruit pie, and the winner of the honorable mention fruit pie goes to Jennifer Iverson. Come on up here, Jennifer. She now has the red whisk of baking. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, too. You come on up here. So, Jennifer, what did you make for us today?
Blueberry pie.
Blueberry pie. What was in there besides blueberry?
It was a graham cracker crust, but I didn't have enough graham crackers, so I used, other random crunchy things that were in my cupboard. And then the blueberries had orange juice, and then on top it was whipped cream and kiwi and raspberries. And
so if you want to judge the pie competition next time, you have to see me. But look, I mean, this is the kind of stuff we had today. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And here's your prize. Okay, again, thanks everybody who brought a pie. Hope you have an enjoyable lunch with each other here at the potluck.